we're now going to move on to agenda item 5, an issue that's been with us before. Fabienne is going to introduce the papers.
Good morning. The committee received a request to clarify whether IFRIC 6 should be applied by NOG to some levies charged for participation in the market on a specified date in order to identify the event that gives rise to liability. The question raised originally in the submission is of the date of recognition of the liability. Related to this is also a question of recognition of the liability in an entity's interim financial reporting. At its meeting in May 2011, in order to help reach a decision as to whether the issue should be taken on its agenda, the committee directed the staff to carry out outreach analysis, outreach activities to national standard sectors to learn about what analysis had already been performed on similar levies and to review the guidance in IAS 37 on the timing of recognition of a liability. For ease of reference, we present the analysis in three successive papers. So Agenda Paper 5 provides a summary of feedback received from national standard setters, and Paper 5A discusses whether in the situations described to us the obligating event is the participation in an activity on the date specified by the legislation or whether the factors create an earlier obligation. And Agenda Paper 5B discusses the accounting in interim reporting period in the situations where the activity date or activity period on the calculation date or period fall in the same annual financial reporting period. Now turning to Agenda Paper 5. So, national standard setters were basically asked to provide details for levies in their jurisdictions for which determining the obligating event and thus when to recognize the liability has proved difficult and for which an analysis had already been performed. So we received feedback from 15 jurisdictions, of which 7 claimed that they faced levies with similar issues as those presented in the original submission. In many cases, the analysis is still at an early stage, mainly because the enactment of related legislation is either quite recent or expected in the near future. So we list the main features of this for the situation that were described to us in paragraph 14 of the paper, and we present in paragraph 16 the accounting treatments that were described to us in some cases. Do you have any questions on that paper? Not, I go on Agenda Paper 5A. So, Agenda Paper 5A, the objective is to discuss whether the obligating event is the participation in an activity on the date specified by the legislation or whether other factors may create another obligation. Because the constituents expressed concerns about the applicability of the guidance in IFRIC 6, the first part of our analysis focuses on such applicability in paragraphs 4 to 15 of the paper. We note that IFRIC 6 did not contemplate the effect on the recognition of the liability of a calculation and an activity periods falling in different reporting periods. And calculation and activity dates or periods are defined in paragraph 8 of the paper. In all but one cases that were reported to us, calculation and activity periods fall in different reporting periods. And in the one situation where it's not the case, the prevalent issue, we think, is of the recognition of the liability in an entity's interim financial reporting. And we will get back to that issue in Agenda Paper 5B. Consequently, we believe that IFRIC 6 addresses a different set of circumstances from those present in the levies that are subject of the paper. Therefore, IFRIC 6 is not directly applicable. However, because IAS 37 is the applicable standard and because IFRIC 6 is an interpretation of that standard, any conclusions drawn should be consistent with both IF 37 and IFRIC 6. So the first question for you is, do you agree with that observation? And that relates to agenda 2, paragraph 15 of the paper.
Anybody disagree? Okay.
The second part of the analysis, then, is of the applicability of IS 37, where the activity and calculation periods dates differ. And the analysis is set out in paragraph 16 to 51 of the paper. The aim of the focus on a simple fact pattern, as described in paragraph 21 and 22 of the paper, is to help identify where the tension lies in applying the requirements of IS 37. Our finding is that where activity and calculation dates periods fall in successive financial reporting periods, tensions arise in determining the obligating event. And we've identified different tensions, the first one being the identification of the past event. That's paragraph 32 to 41 of the paper, with two competing views, UC and UD. Briefly, UC is of identifying the past event depends on the relative significance of the entity's activity during the calculation period compared with its activity during the activity period. And UD is that the past event is participating in the designated activity in the activity period date. The second tension is the likelihood of the present obligation and its effect on recognition. That's paragraph 42 to 44 of the paper. Guidance in paragraph 15 of 37 could be read as supporting UC, as mentioned above earlier, in circumstances where it is highly unlikely that an outflow of economic benefits can be avoided. However, that paragraph 15 of 37 could also be read as not affecting view D, because it could be claimed that it's clear when the activity period is, and therefore this is not one of those rare cases when it is not clear whether there is a present obligation. We therefore believe that paragraph 15 of 37 provides insufficient guidance to resolve the issue. The last tension point is deals with the realistic alternative to settling the obligation. And we observe that when the activity date is the first day of the financial reporting period, immediately following the calculation period, it is virtually certain at the end of the calculation period that the entity will be assessed as participating in the market on the activity date. We note that two divergent views exist, that's paragraph 47 of the paper, that's view E and view F, view E being against recognizing a liability on the basis that paragraph 17 of IS 37 is worded restrictively, and view F expresses a concern over the use of an assumption that the entity could seize a particular business activity for the purpose of avoiding having to recognize the liability. Again, these differing views lead us to believe that additional guidance is needed to reduce diversity in practice. So coming to our recommendation, that's expressed in paragraphs 49 to 51 of the paper, we recommend that the Interagencies Committee or the Board should consider providing guidance to clarify the no realistic alternative to setting the obligation created by the event, and provide guidance to help apply the recognition criterion in paragraph 14A of IS 37 in the specific cases where the levy combines the two following features. The measurement of the levy is based on financial data in the previous annual financial reporting period, and it is virtually certain at the end of the previous reporting period that the entity will have to pay the levy. Given the assessment against the agenda criteria in paragraph 52 of the paper, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee take the issue onto its agenda. So does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation?
Okay. Comments, questions?
I agree with the recommendation to take it on. I think the staff have done an excellent analysis of why we have a problem, and in distinguishing between the activity date and the calculation period. But what I'm worried about is that we're talking about recognition versus measurement, and it seems that in a couple of cases in practice, in the US case and I think in the Hungarian case, the answer has come out that 1 January 2011, let's say, is your activity date, that's when your obligating event arises under IS 37, that's when your recognition criteria are met, you measure the liability based on the preceding year. So the US has come up with that answer, and so have the Hungarians. What I'm worried about is what is it that we can do in IS 37 to change that, where other than applying para 15, and I think Fabian's got some good arguments why 15 would not apply. So the question we have really is as Fabian has framed it, is what if we know as at 31 December 2010 that we will have to pay something the very next day, but our obligating event is only the very next day, and that's the issue that we're faced with. And I'm not sure that we would be able to convince the board, and I'll be looking at the board members here, to change the recognition criteria to say, well, when you know that you will have to pay something the very next day, that you should book it even though that day hasn't arrived. And to me, I think that is the crux of the issue, and you've described it extremely well. So I'd be looking to the board for some guidance as to whether it is worth taking this on. Is there a chance that IS 37 could be modified or changed?
Well, that's second-guessing what answer you would prefer as opposed to what we might actually come up with and have a reasonable explanation so that everybody can understand. Yeah. Okay. Scott?
Yeah, I'm also happy with the staff recommendation to take this on. I don't know if I share Ruth's concern. I mean, if the board says, IS 37 says what it says, I think I know what I would say in an interpretation then, but it seems to me that even if we don't change, if we're not going to make a change to IS 37, there's still a need for some guidance. So I'd be happy taking it on, and the need for guidance, I think, becomes particularly more clear when we get to 5B, because it seems to me that that one needs some help in the interim periods, even if it turns out we can't do anything in the annual period except the same thing the U.S. and Hungary did. So I'm happy to take it on.
Thanks. Jana?
I agree with Ruth that I thought it was an excellent paper. I thought it was very well argued. I support taking it on. And interestingly, Ruth's where she thinks it will end up, the implication of how she was saying it, I would be the opposite, i.e. my interpretation of 37. But that is, as you say, second-guessing. But perhaps for that very reason, or not for that very, but I would support taking it on. But I do think, and we'll obviously come on to 5B, there are issues which I think in 5B that aren't necessarily around the interim, but simply when do you recognise the expense, that I would actually link into this as opposed to doing an interpretation of 34, but perhaps we'll come on to that.
Okay. Laurence?
I support the Secretary's need for guidance on this topic, whether it is us that can provide...
Sorry, Laurence, your sound is breaking up. We just can't hear what you're saying. I know it's frustrating for you.
On my side, they can hear you very well. It's not breaking up on my side.
Can I suggest you try and arrange with your people there to dial in?
They try. Okay.
Sorry, we just can't hear the words that you're speaking. So if you can get a telephone link in, then we can hear. Guido?
Okay. I also think we should give it another thought because it's an important issue. I think, though, that we might have a problem with coming up with an interpretation within the confines of existing IFRS, which is IAS 37 here, because I think 37 is a balance sheet-based approach. It says, do you have at the balance sheet date an obligation? And if not, you're not recognizing a liability or expense. It's not a matching principle approach that a lot of people...
Peter, what is the matching principle? Have you come across that? Is that in the concept, framework?
No, it's not, and that's why IAS 37 is not looking at the matching principle, which I understand a lot of people would like to have, because they say, well, the revenues that I'm making in the year before, I should match also the expenses in this year, even though the obligating event is later. So, yeah, we should look at it, but I would also support, you know, working very closely with the IASB find out whether we really can come up with a conclusion within the confines of 37, because I think reading 37 and the smoke filter example in there gives you a clear answer. It's the obligating event is at the next year.
So it sounds like you think we can come to a conclusion fairly easily then.
Well, maybe, but that's obviously not...
like it.
Well, whether I like it or not, I can understand that there are two options. It's either the balance sheet approach or the other one. But, you know, the problem that I have is looking at these levies that we are looking at, you know, this has a much broader implication. It's not only for these levies. It's really at the heart of IAS 37, when do you recognize a liability? This is a real broad, not a narrow issue. And I was also thinking about, you know, what would happen if the activity period would be in the future. Like for contingent considerations, would we then also say, well, the activities are taking place in the future, so you not recognize the liability right now because the activities are in the future? I just want to say this is really a very broad issue, and I think we should look at it, but I think at the end of the day we would have to say, well, it's too broad and it's an issue that the board should take on.
Well, I think we have covered the question of whether the activities will be in the future by saying that if you are in business on the first day of the next financial year, that sounds like in the future to me. The balance sheet approach that you perhaps question is what IAS 37 is based on and what IAS 1 is based on. And so it's events at the reporting date, not events that you think might happen in a subsequent period, even if it's happened before you actually compile the report. So I'm sure we'll work closely with the IASB to make sure that we don't rewrite IAS 37 inadvertently. Andrew?
Well, I agree with Guido. I think it's a big topic, but happy to take a look at it. I think some of the things we need to bear in mind as we do so. If you're going down the virtual certainty, provide when it's virtually certain kind of argument, then somehow there may be some cut-off issues. You know, why just provide for 1 year's levy? Why not provide for 2 years? Unless you're going to argue, well, it's virtually certain you're going to be around tomorrow, but it's not virtually certain you're going to be around in a year's time. And then if you take the calculation period as the trigger, I mean, maybe the Hungarian case is very unusual, but as I understand the Hungarian case, that the numbers in 2009 drove a liability for 2010 and 2011, so you might end up providing 2 years as a result of, you know, in that case. So there's some quite important cut-off issues that we need to take into account, but happy to take a look.
Okay. Peggy?
I agree with both Guido and Andrew that this could be a very broad topic, and I question if we'd be able to reach a resolution in a short enough time period, and maybe this isn't an IFRIC issue, but maybe it's an AIP type issue on looking at IAS 37. Because my concern is that, you know, we're talking here about very specific levies, but the way most governments are these days, the amount of different assessments that are going to be coming at companies all around the world as people are trying to raise revenues. It's just going to multiply, and there's going to be a lot of different situations in the future where we'll have a similar set of facts and circumstances. And so how do you draw the line with, you know, these specific issues with, and others that are going to be coming down the path in the next couple of years? I just think that it's going to become a very big topic, and maybe it could be too broad for us to try and resolve here in a quick time.
Okay. Staff is trying to give us some of the basic characteristics of these levies so that people will be able to, if not analogize, will be able to see how we've addressed certain characteristics in the way we can take it forward. I'm listening to your comments about it's all too big as to whether or not this is something that we could reach a consensus on a timely basis, but the staff is confident that you can do that. And I suppose I'd better make full disclosure. I was going to make it in the second topic that this is Fabienne's last meeting with us, so her confidence perhaps is something that we should take somewhat circumspectly. Charlotte, do you possibly have an interest in this sort of topic?
I should end up having an interest in this probably in the second paper, really, on the interim period. But I would say I think it is an important issue. I agree with other people, it's an important issue that we take on. I'd hope that it could be an issue that IFRIC could deal with, really, around the interpretation of the entity having no realistic alternative. But I'm not sure whether we could get there, and really where you would draw the line and not bring too many things into the scope. I also agree with Andrew's point. I think there's a lot of cut-off issues, especially when a lot of the criteria, even for the bank levy, are driven around numbers, which you'd have to predict, and it's when does being close to a number of no realistic alternative, for example. But I think it is important that we take it on.
Okay. John?
Also agree to take it on the agenda. I think the Guido has set out the real issue. I don't see that as a measurement, an issue with a different measurement period. Measurement is measurement. I think the real issue is what creates the present obligation under IAS 37.
Yes.
And when we say we might not like the answer, I think that's quite true.
Yeah.
I think we can reach a conclusion. The issue is the matching principle, or whether that makes sense or not. There's always a solution if you accrue a liability at the beginning of the year. It may create, in my view, it may create an asset, which is your access to the market. And then you can have some sort of matching going forward, not going back, which is maybe the problem. So I think if we refrain from trying to restate IAS 37, I think we can interpret within the context of IAS 37, whether we like it or not. I think that's the mandate we should limit ourselves to.
Ruth?
Just on the point that Jean raised about the asset, which is what the US came up with in their EITF, would there be any scope for us to create similar guidance? I mean, we would be interpreting IAS 37, but would there be any scope for us to say, let's say we decided that the liability only arises on the activity date because that is the obligating date. Let's say we arrive at that conclusion. Would it be within our scope to say at the same time you would recognise an asset for your right to operate in the market and apply the same approach that the US has applied? I'm just asking it as a question of process. Would we be able to reach such an answer in any sort of interpretation?
I think we could. But we'd have to be very careful because that would, in effect, narrow the scope of the types of levy that result only then in the creation of this intangible asset, the right to operate in a subsequent period. And we would then leave open the question of, well, what do you do if it doesn't do that? Or alternatively, we really have two issues that are arising out of here. One is focusing on the IAS 37 issue on the levies themselves, and that deals with the credit. And we tend to concern ourselves with only half of the bookkeeping equation. So whether we would then add on something that says, and subsequently you then have to decide if what you've got is something that meets the definition of an asset, an intangible under 38, in which case you account for it under there, and if it doesn't, then you account for it as an expense. But
I think just to add to that, of course, IFRIC 1 on the decommissioning liabilities did do that. It did give guidance both on the liability side and the corresponding debit side as to how to deal with that. So we've got a precedent there. If that was, as a result of the discussions of the committee, that seemed the appropriate route to go down, I think we could go there.
Bert?
Well, I'm not sure that we should take it on. When we often have the issue that people come to a conclusion on a certain issue, but they don't like the outcome, and that's when they ask us to reinterpret the standard. When I'm listening to what members say, it seems to me that the standard is clear, but some of the people in here don't like the answer. And to me, I'm in Guido's camp. I think the standard is quite clear, and there is no provision to set up. And I'm not sure that we can reinterpret the standard. We can ask the ISB to rewrite the standard, but I'm not sure that we come to a conclusion to reinterpret the standard, just on the basis that we don't like it.
We are, or at least the staff is, partly anticipating that the board is going to do some work on IS-37 at some time in the future, but doesn't expect it to be done as soon as we would finish this interpretation. Question about liaison then is to keep in touch with the ISB board members to make sure that if in fact they started to re-energize the project and if it was likely to result in a change to the recognition principles, then that may have an impact on the way we would develop an interpretation. But it's an issue that has arisen now, which on the staff's assessment and mine, it looks as if we could reach a consensus sooner than the board, so we can't escape our responsibilities in that sense. Peggy?
Just a question. Do we have an idea right now where the accounting firms stand on this currently?
Well, if it was so clear as everybody's suggesting, then they should all be on the same side, but that isn't my sense. Fabienne, do you want to make a comment?
There are different views among the firms themselves. So
again, I just question if we'd be able to reach a consensus in a timely fashion.
Well, even if the four audit firms that are represented around this table have got differences among themselves, that doesn't mean that more than four people will object.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's where I'm.
And of course, the members here express their own views, not the views of their constituents. So, Laurence, do you have a phone link to us, or are we keeping you silent?
You know, it's lunchtime in Paris, so you need to get some.
Well,
but you seem to have
on a rainy day in London, I suggest that you go out and have a glass of champagne and enjoy the rest of the day then.
No, I am with Guido. I believe it is a very difficult topic. I believe the issue is one of identifying when the event takes place, which is an issue that the board has looked at itself in the revision of IS-37 for quite a long time and has not issued a revised standard. I also believe that the taxes we are talking on are annual taxes that are very specific. They are not famous. And we know that relationships with governments, they have been special for dealing with those relationships with governments, such as IS-12 and IS-20. So I am not separate from convinced that we will be able to come up with a solution within the confines of IS 37, because effectively those taxes are so special. I do believe that we can do some work digging into the issue, trying to find ways to move forward on this to get to a sensible answer. I am not convinced that this will lead to an interpretation. I believe that it's more in the ISB's remit to tackle with this issue, but IFRIC can do some work, preliminary work on this.
Scott?
Hearing the conversation, I still think we should take this on, but perhaps the staff could help in the interim by finding out from the board whether we ought to be trying to provide guidance in the context of the current IAS 37, in which case I think I've heard a number of people around the table say they think they know what that answer is. I would tell you, even in that case, I think it's worth doing an interpretation, because even if we all agree on what IAS 37 says, the broader accounting world does not, and it would be helpful for us to write an interpretation that explains that. Or perhaps staff could find out from the board, should we feel free to rethink IAS 37 and suggest to the board what we think the better recognition principles are. I, for one, would rather do the former than the latter. But if we are, if the board wants our help in the IAS 37 project and wants to get it through this issue, that's fine too. But we ought to decide before we talk about it too much at the next meeting which way we're supposed to be thinking about it. Is it within the context of 37, or is it, you know, 37's being rethought anyways, so, you know, go ahead and take a clean sheet of paper. We can do either, but we ought to figure out which one we're doing.
Well, I don't quite agree that we can do either, because the Effective Practices Handbook does restrict us in some way, that if a matter is already addressed by IFRS, we consider whether we should be issuing an interpretation or now an annual improvement if there's a need to clarify something within that standard. We don't have carte blanche to take a clean sheet of paper and rewrite the standard. We can do that work if the board invites us to do it. The concern about that, of course, is that the board could only invite us having considered what the issue is. That would be some time after the September board meeting. We couldn't get there sooner. So we would therefore be in a position where we are doing nothing until at least November. I don't think it would be right for us to act, as it were, voluntarily to debate this issue. But fortunately, we do have a good relationship with the ISB and its board members, as we've got three of them here. So I'll start by asking Philippe for his personal views on what advice you can give to this committee on what you think we should do to take us forward.
Well, I think first we do not know yet whether we will reopen IS 37. That's one of the potential agenda items, but the decision will depend on the support that our constituents will express for that in the consultation. Second, the scope of that revision of IS 37, if it was the same scope as what we had in process that we stopped, it probably would not reopen the recognition criteria. It was more about measurement and uncertain liabilities, so the more likely than not or the best estimate or whatever. It was not about the timing of recognition of a liability, so we would have to change the scope of IS 37 and then I think start with a blank sheet of paper, the new IS 37, which I have no idea whether the board we'll have any appetite for doing that, given that we have some work going on the framework, and we should also determine what a liability is if we complete the framework. No, that is not very helpful to the committee, I'm afraid.
That's very helpful.
Just to let you know that don't feel personally that the board will come up with an improvement or whatever, a modification of IS 47 in the short future. Whether IFRIC should do something, I believe there are probably some wisdom and knowledge to be derived from the work already done by IFRIC that could help, I mean, IFRIC seats or some others, that could help in certain situations, but would not lead to having a general interpretation applicable ergo omnes for all possible new situations. That is not a reason for not doing anything and not trying to be helpful for some of the possible cases that would, by analogy, be dealt with, but it would be limited in scope, I guess. Now, whether IFRIC can also do some research, I don't think that's really the role of research, IFRIC to do general research on recognition principles. So.
Fabienne's successor is the one that would do some research, you know, voluntarily. Patricia, do you have any views, thoughts, helpful advice?
Well, I agree with Philippe that it's unlikely that even if the board were to reopen IAS 37 in light of comments received on its outreach on our future agenda, it would be some considerable period of time before it issued a standard, and therefore guidance in the interim would be very helpful. And so I would encourage IFRIC to do what it can to clarify this issue, because I think people may, in their heart of hearts, believe the answer is clear, but want to come to a different answer. And so I think if IFRIC provided guidance, it would make them look into their heart of hearts. And I think the staff's preliminary analysis, particularly making the distinction between the activity period and the measurement period, is a very good direction to go in.
Thanks. Amara, do you have any thoughts for us?
It's hard not to agree with both Philippe and Patricia. It's, as we all know, it's one of the most contentious discussions in recent years. Whenever we decided to move on expanding interpretation of IAS 37. So this is an issue that I agree with Patricia in her last comment. I think the papers are excellent, as many of you already expressed it. And if the IFRIC can provide clear guidance on this beneath the interpretation, as someone said here, mandate, that would be quite valuable.
Thank you. Scott, do you want to respond? I can't remember if it should have been turned off or not.
Should be on.
Right. Okay, so decision time now. If we turn to the questions that the staff is wanting answered. Question one, does the Interpretation Committee agree with the staff's conclusions summarized in paragraphs 53 to 57? So what we're really asking there is that staff thinks, and you may disagree, that the staff thinks it meets the agenda criteria to take it on as an interpretive project, and that the scope of it would be to clarify the phrase no realistic alternative to settling the obligation created by the event, and then to help to apply the recognition criteria in the specific cases where the levy combines the two following features. Now, I'm emphasizing that because it's important when you say, yes, we want to take it on, that you don't have this hankering to change anything else. This is the question we're asking you at the moment based on the staff paper. As we go through it, there may be other issues that come up that may cause us to want to add things to the project. We've got to beware of scope creep because we've got to be mindful of reaching a consensus on a timely basis. Now, if in your heart of hearts you feel that you know what the answer is going to be and you're going to vote against it, then it's likely that we will not reach consensus. If you think, on the other hand, that we're not addressing sufficient in here and that we need to address much broader issues that will take much more time to come to a conclusion, then equally we won't meet the objective of having a narrow scope where we can reach a consensus on a timely basis. Now, I wouldn't normally remind you of all of those things, but I've heard so many comments from more than four people that suggest that you're not entirely happy with taking this project on. And I've heard enough people to say there is a majority who would like to take this on. But the question is, do you think we will be able to reach a consensus on a timely basis based on the scope definition we've got now? So, does anybody not agree with the staff recommendation on scope and that we take this item onto our agenda? Okay. One, only one objection.
Two.
Oh, sorry, Lawrence. Yeah, okay. All right. So, we will then add it to the agenda. That doesn't mean we'll see you next time, Fabien, but there's more work to do. Okay, shall we turn to your second paper?
So moving to agenda paper 5B. So the objective of this paper is to discuss the accounting interim reporting period in the situations where the activity date period and the calculation date period fall in the same annual financial reporting period. The following divergent views are currently being considered. View A is that the liability and the corresponding charge should be recognized in full only on the specific day identified in the legislation. Or view B, that the recognition of charge to the profit or loss should be progressive over the period. Our analysis focuses on drawing out indicators that may serve when identifying the appropriate accounting. The first indicator is, that's from a balance sheet perspective, whether a levy meets the relevant criteria at the interim reporting date. That's paragraph 10 to 12 of the paper. Then the second part of the analysis focuses on whether the levy relates to a point in time or to a period of time. And for that matter, paragraph 17 of the paper presents a table that lists indicators for both cases. Our conclusion is that the consequence of applying paragraph 28 of IS 34 is that accrual is needed at interim dates in the specific circumstances described by the combination of the indicators listed in paragraph 17, that the levy relates to a period of time, and the facts on that facts and circumstances are the same at the end of the interim reporting period as there are at the end of the annual financial reporting period. Coming to the staff's recommendation, given the assessment in against the agenda criteria in paragraph 24 of the paper, we recommend that the Interventions Committee should propose to clarify that in circumstances where the combined factors are present, those I've mentioned before, there should be an accrual in interim financial reporting periods. Does the committee agree? And the question is whether you would like to take that on the agenda.
Andrew?
Well, two questions actually to start with. I'd be interested to know where if we go with the recommendation in paragraph 22 and look at the indicators in paragraph 17, what that would do for the UK bank levy situation, because as I understand it, looking at the in paragraph 17, the indicators that a levy relates to a period of time, my understanding is that the UK bank levy would fail the second of those criteria, i.e. measurement of levy relates to circumstances over a period of time. And the other question I had was I wasn't really quite sure what 22B meant, facts and circumstances being at the same of the interim reporting date as they are at the annual financial reporting period. I didn't really understand what that meant. So if there's any clarification on those two issues, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Your first question was about the UK banking levy, I think. Was that right?
It wasn't about that. That's one of the things that's driven this. And I just wondered if we go down the staff's recommendation, what that would mean for the UK bank levy and interim numbers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously what we wanted to do here is to focus on the more general facts rather than answer one particular jurisdiction's tax. So that's why we've tried to sort of look at more sort of general circumstances here. The question about paragraph 22 about the facts and circumstances at the end of the interim period. Our thinking there was that if at the end of the interim period you had met all of the conditions necessary to trigger the liability at that date, as if that was the end of the annual period. In other words, you were already participating in the activity that triggered the, or would trigger the tax, then that was, we thought, a basis on which to say, yes, you're already in the scope of the liability, although the actual calculation may not be triggered until the last day of the annual period, you're already within the scope, and it would actually take positive action to take yourself outside of the scope between the interim and the year end. And for example, those levies where perhaps if you had a short period would lead to a pro rata of the calculation, then in fact if you were to determine a short accounting period rather than the normal 12 months for your annual period, then you would end up being caught by that liability at that particular date.
Okay, thank
you. Scott? I don't agree with the staff's recommendation. I read IAS 34 to say whether you have an asset or liability at an interim date should be determined based on the same analysis that you would do if it was year end. And I think the way the staff has it laid out, if we take the UK bank levy, which is triggered at the end of the calendar year, I think the staff would say that if you prepare half-yearly financial statements on June 30, then you would have, in most cases, a liability record for a half year's activity. But if June 30 happened to be your fiscal year end, and you were preparing annual financial statements as of that point, you would not have a liability because you haven't hit the IAS 37 trigger date, and that confuses me. So I don't agree with the staff's recommendation, which leads me to recommend that since we've already decided to take on the issue presented in paper 5A, we roll this into that issue and discuss it.
Scott, if I can just clarify something which I don't think we've communicated clearly enough then in the paper. We were writing this on the basis of a relative date triggering the liability. So, for example, if your legislation, if your levy caused you to or triggered the liability at the end of your financial reporting year, regardless of whether that was 30th of June, 31 December, 31 March, then that's the sort of levy that we were envisaging in this paper. So that if at the half year you had met all of the conditions necessary to trigger the liability, and the reporting that you were preparing was actually your full year end rather than your half year, then you would actually have a liability. Those were the circumstances that we were envisaging that you would have a basis for provision in your interim financials.
Then perhaps I misread. So in your situation, the UK bank levy, you would say there is not anything to record at June 30 because you have to be in business December 31 to trigger it? I thought that this was written to say because you expect to be in business at December 31st and are in fact in business at June 30, you would have half the liability to record in your June 30 interims. I thought that's what this paper said. Maybe I Maybe I misread
this. This is something that we can clarify as we take it forward, because it's. I agree it's related back to the 5A question. Is it 31st December? Is it 1st of January? Does that make a difference? There's a probability of payment, not necessarily the recognition of the liability. So that's the first part we need to look at. Then I think you would apply that in here. Not talking specifically about the UK bank levy, but if there is a levy that is on a relative date, that is the end of the reporting period, then whatever your reporting period is, if you're in business, then there would be a liability. I think there would be a liability. If, on the other hand, it is a fixed date, 31st of December, 1st of January, then it's a question of, if you're not at that date, then what's the answer to 5A? And that will give us the ruling. Yeah. Okay. Joanna?
Yeah, just listening to those last discussions, and I think that's what I was trying to articulate and getting to. I think that we're probably jumping the gun on this one, that we need to do 5A first, and I think that the logic in this paper, and I'm not sure what order they were written in, doesn't necessarily follow the same logic in 5A, and that even in your little table in 17, you use measurement as opposed to activity period, and I think the key is the activity period again. And when should the debit be recognised, and is that over a period, and over what period? And that, together with the analysis of when is the liability incurred, I think will give a very clear picture for the interim financial statements, and we shouldn't jump to doing interim first. I think we've got to deal with 5A, and perhaps, and I know you said we don't want scope creep, but I think as part of that, consider when is the debit recognised, over what period, and then I think we will automatically get an answer to this one without actually trying to get there first.
You've got actually 2 points that you're putting into one, I think, there, Joanna. The debit is recognised when the liability is recognised. It has to be then. So that's a question of the measurement of the liability. There is a separate question then as to whether you would attribute that to an asset or an expense, and if it's an asset, over what period. I think we're with you on that. 5A has to come first.
Yes.
And that's why it's 5A and not 5B. Peggy.
Just one other comment with respect to 5A that we have. I don't think it's specifically addressed here. It's just if the amount is refundable or not. I'm just thinking of some assessments that I personally have now from the state of Connecticut that are new. And if it's, and in some cases they're refundable, so let's say you sell something, you get taxed at the beginning of a quarter or whatever, and you sell it, you get it back, but others they're not. And I don't think we've talked about that, so.
Okay. Guido.
Well, same view from my side, 5A, we should deal with it, as I understand 5B, it seems to me that when I look at the heading of paragraph 19 and analysis against the guidance in IAS 34, there was a red alert going up. You know, I don't think if at the end of the day, whatever the solution will be under 5A, if we could come to a solution, this solution would apply in 34, because 34.28 says apply the same rules and we shouldn't have an exemption here. And it seems to me that the staff paper is trying to bring an exemption into 34. If there is an analysis, and paragraph 22 is part of this analysis against the guidance in 34, I don't think we should do it.
Okay. Laurence?
My first comment would be that my experience of the taxes is that the cases where you have indicators that the levy relates to a period of time, those cases would be more rare than the other case. And my second comment is I support the comments that have been made that it's important to address the issues in 5A first, before you do any amendment by it.
Kaz.
Well, thank you. Well, I agree that we should discuss 5A first, but at the same time, IS 34 is important, and I was just concerned about just adding this phrase. May it is consistent with other kind of concept principle of the IS 34. It may cause any confusion if you add this first. So I just want to maybe generalize discussing with the IS 34 first. I understand it's a kind of candidate of the agenda for the board. So hopefully that can be taken care of that in their side. So I think a specific issue for this levy, we can start from the 5A, and then if possible, we can discuss this as I-34 interim period issue.
Okay. Ruth?
Yeah, I agree that 5B is a subset of 5A. But 5B deals with when the activity date and the measurement date or calculation date are in the same period, whereas 5A, the narrow issue we're going to deal with is where they're in a different period. So when we get to dealing with interim periods, I think then we need to look at the interim period as, is that a do we have a different measurement date from activity date as trying to make it the same issue, because I think they are different issues the way they're expressed at the moment. In what the staff have done in 34, they're in the same period, the same annual period.
Mm-hmm.
In 5A, they're in different periods, and that's what you want us to look at and to focus on. So I'm not sure you'll necessarily get to the answer for IS 34 just by focusing on the two different periods. But I agree that we shouldn't do this yet. I think we need to do A first. And I had the same concerns with Scott on the conclusions that you had arrived at, because I think there was a bit of mixing of recognition and measurement criteria.
Okay, we'll refine that for the next paper. Scott?
Just want to say, after Michael responded to my previous comment and I read this with that in line, I now understand what 5B was trying to say. So I withdraw most of what I said previously, but like everybody else, I think we ought to discuss the 5B issue as part of the paper. But I now understand, I think, what this is meant to be, and I understand that it's not necessarily a conflict with IAS 37. That I think I misread it. So.
All right, so maybe I should just ask question two, then, of the committee, which is whether you agree with the staff recommendation to take the issue of interim financial reporting in these circumstances onto the agenda. Does anybody object to taking it onto the agenda? Nope, okay. So you've given work to someone, though, Fabienne, I'm not sure who.
So the question you asked was a definitive, should we take it onto the agenda? I just wonder whether that implies we're definitely going to do an interpretation, because I would argue it's too early to say yet. I certainly don't want to give a tentative decision that says we're not going to look at this ever again, but I'm concerned that the implication is there will definitely be an interpretation, because it may be we reach a point that we say, actually, it's so damn obvious once we've done 5A that we don't need to do that. So I'm not quite sure of the implications of our response to your question.
Well, because people have been raising concerns about some of the terms that are in here, whether or not the recommendations, the table that the staff had proposed, are actually the ones that we should be looking at, and whether we should be, in fact, focusing more on 5A, and then 5A will give us the answer to some, but not all, of the issues in interim reporting. If 5A says, if your activity period is important, and if you have engaged in that activity, then you recognize the liability that that activity would give rise to on one date, then we've got an answer for interim reporting, because it already now exists. If it only exists at the end of a period, then the question for interim reporting is going to be, well, if it doesn't exist now, you wouldn't make an estimate of it I think IS 34 is clear. So if you wouldn't recognize a liability, you don't have a liability, then you don't recognize that. The question is, but if you're in an environment where if it was your year end, then how would we deal with that? There are a number of questions that come out of this. We're not going to split this into two interpretations, so that's why I'm asking the question now, so the staff knows what they have to be thinking about. The order in which we'll do it is 5A first, 5B will follow on from that. If we find that 5B requires us to give just a single paragraph, just to clarify, so there's no doubt in anybody's mind, that's fine. I suspect it might take more than that. So the staff knows where we should be going. Bernd?
If we take this on together, and the decision now that we've taken was we take this on as part of the other project or as part of the two-in-one project, then I think that's okay. Otherwise, I would have been taken by surprise a little bit by the decision we take this on a separate project, because that was not what I was hearing from the table.
No.